Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
We still haven't spoken with Justin Trudeau. Been trying since about 2013. Well, truth be told, I haven't tried very hard over the last few years because it became very obvious that we weren't going to get the interview that that I wanted. So it is what it is.
But I did have the opportunity to speak to another Trudeau, and that was about 2.5 weeks ago, and it was Sophie Gregoire Trudeau, about her new book, Closer Together, Knowing Ourselves and Loving Each Other. Have a listen. Sophie, I'm always intrigued by the title of a book, and yours, Closer Together, Knowing Ourselves, Loving Each Other. And I thought without the former, knowing ourselves, the latter, loving each other, becomes more challenging, and perhaps particularly for only children, which you and I both are, I understand. So the only child.
You want to play? I'm always looking for a new friend.
Let's do that. So the only, this is interesting. You just made the point. The only child's relationships are projected outward. We don't have brothers or sisters who've shared the foundation of our development. So it's not always easy. And the only child is not always understood by people who come from large families. Am I getting too deep here?
Absolutely not. Never enough depth in true conversations that we can learn from. And I actually love your question because, you know, the title is not accidental. First of all, I daydreamed the cover. I saw everybody holding each other and going around the book, and I'm super happy that we could make that happen. Closer together is necessary in so many different ways in order to be able to face the crises that we're facing as individuals and as communities. Knowing ourselves, loving each other. In order to love each other with nourishment and discernment and freedom in some ways, we need to know ourselves. And in schools, we are taught incredible topics, but do we really educate ourselves around emotional literacy and relational literacy? You know, we live in a society where our concepts of union, you know, like, marriage is success, divorce is failure. Well, funny enough, life happens in between. And people change, people evolve. We don't experience everything at the same time and at the same rhythm. And the most secure people, and I talk about this in the book with psychologist Rosemarie Charest, that the most secure people are the ones that are less threatened by the difference in others. Now, if you look at the state of the world today, how many people feel threatened by others' difference also means that there has been a lack of connection to ourselves that has not allowed us to build the strength, the resilience, and the adaptability that we are truly capable of as human beings and communities to be able to navigate the changes that we face. And change is tough. And the brain doesn't like uncertainty. And I explore that in the book as well. So it was important for me in this book to not only, you know, bring the human component of what it means to be alive here on planet Earth, but also the science behind how we are wired and how we carry that wiring in our brains, in our bodies, in our emotions, in our relationships through the course of our whole lifetime.
You mentioned school and the young people. So let me just segue to that. Now, let's talk about mental health, which is a very important issue to you, I know. Here we are, still in societal recovery from being released from the restrictions of the pandemic. Perhaps particularly most severely affected are children whose movements and interactions with their peers at school and elsewhere suffered, and who in turn are suffering now. How would you suggest such suffering children might be helped?
The biggest traumas, and we're going to push away the atrocities of war and you know, the extremes right now for the purpose of this conversation. But the biggest wounds that can be caused to a human being, to a person, is by lack of nourishment, of emotional nourishment and connection. But the solution is through human connection. And I've talked with actual kindergarten teachers and, you know, other kind of people who are mentoring children during the pandemic and post-pandemic. And they were telling me how important connection is through this process. And play in children, you know, unstructured play. A lot of, you know, during the, in the book, I talked with Dr. Gordon Neufeld, who was called to help out with the classrooms, teachers and students in Ukraine. And he was asked, what do we do to try to calm the children and make them feel safe? And he said, well, you put the curriculum aside and you let the children play with no structure. Don't try to guide and control. And why? Because when we play and express our creativity as human beings, as a child or as an adult, the brain kind of goes into safety and restoration mode, which is incredible because there's a neurobiological imperative to well-being, physically and mentally. And if we don't educate ourselves on this matter, then we walk away and completely beside the purpose of what it means to be here on this planet when we're supposed to envision and create for the better good and not divide and polarize and hate. Then again, hate, for example, and I talk about it with the dehumanization expert in my book, stems from a need for connection. So I see the world and people very differently now that I've written this book, and I really want to share it in the most simple way so people can relate and feel safe enough to tell their stories and look inside themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm. We have just a few minutes left with you, and I just want to squeeze in two, maybe three questions if I can. In Closer Together, you write that you lived with an eating disorder in your youth and early adult years. I've interviewed people with eating disorders and particularly remember a young lady suffering with anorexia who in my studio couldn't sit during the interview because she needed to, in her mind, burn calories in order to deal with her own body image. She was terribly thin, so much so that her anorexia was threatening her life. Intellectually, she understood, but in her mind's eye, she was very much overweight. It was tragic to see up close, and she'd visited several doctors seeking help. How did you manage your eating disorders, and what would you say to a young or any person listening right now who's experiencing something similar?
First of all, what you just brought up is heart-wrenching. And people have to understand that eating disorders, like any other type of compulsion, constant dieting, gaming, social media, addiction to sex, addiction to binged TV watching, whatever it is, whatever you are trying, whatever pain you're trying to numb, that is an expression of your deep longing for better connection to yourself and expressing your authenticity. That young girl who was suffering, it had to do with food, but that's the tip of the iceberg. Eating disorders are about a distorted sense of self, a longing for connection, a lack of control over our own lives. And when we live in a society where self-betrayal, physically and mentally, is rewarded, we are going counterintuitive. We are going counter nature. So this question is very important because when we talk about mental health, it's not a cause. It's a reality that flows through all of us. It's the fabric of our lives. It's our universal common denominator. And we are bound by it altogether. So let's not judge each other through our suffering because we're all one trauma away from each other. It takes one traumatic life event or a series of chronic traumas to create a change in your brain from a neurobiological perspective and a change in your behavior and how you interact with life and with others.
Let me get to the elephant in the room, get it out of the way, and address the issue everyone's curious about, and that is the separation from your husband. You're reported to have said that you imagined the worst-case scenario when your separation became public. Separation is a hugely emotional decision for anyone. How did things evolve for you?
At 49, very soon, or now when this comes out, I have learned to embrace uncertainty. I have learned to embrace the fact that no one belongs to each other. We don't possess the other. And sometimes love expresses itself in setting others free. It is hard. It is painful. And it demands for a lot of sitting with pain without feeling overwhelmed. It is a continuous learning process. And we do not have to completely end relationships or you know, completely negate them in order to instill change and structure. And I think there is a huge lesson to be learned here as how we have the capacity to still love while we restructure our units, our bonds, or whatever you want to call them.
I have so many more questions for you, but I know we don't have the time. Let me just ask you this. What do you hope the reader of Closer Together, Knowing Ourselves, Loving Each Other, comes away with?
A feeling that you are worthy of nourishment from an emotional perspective. A sense that you are worthy of compassion and empathy. And most of all, that you have all the tools within you and all the support that you think you might not have is out there in order to make you more at peace with yourself in this world. It is there. We have it in us, and we have it if we come closer together. It's all possible.
Sophie, thank you very much for the time. If you ever feel like co-hosting my show.
Hey, please let never me, say never.
No, please let me know. I'd love to do it. I think we'd have a lot to talk about.
That's so great. And by the way, I love this conversation. And you're right. There is so much more to discuss. So thank you for shedding light on this.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.